Welcome to the Classic Christian Writers Podcast, where we seek to provide audio recordings of some of the greatest Christian writings and sermons. I'm your reader, Ryan Martin. This installment of the Classic Christian Writers Podcast has the second and concluding part of our Jonathan Edwards sermon, The Christian Pilgrim. Jonathan Edwards, who lived from 1703 to 58, is not only regarded as one of the most prominent American Christian theologians, but also as one of the greatest philosophers in American history. Edwards is often associated with Puritanism and Calvinism, and was very influential in the First Great Awakening in the 1730s and 40s. Some of his greatest theological treatises remain widely read today. This includes The Religious Affections and The Freedom of the Will. Many of his sermons, such as Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, have also gained a wide reputation. The Christian Pilgrim is not the most famous Edwards sermon, but shows the great imagination, intelligence, and Christian piety of this Northampton, Massachusetts preacher. Before we begin, I'd like to ask that if you have any comments, suggestions, or other general feedback, or if you'd simply like to tell me that you've been listening, please write me, Ryan Martin. My email address is ryanjaredmartin@gmail.com. That's ryanjaredmartin@gmail.com. Now for the second part of Jonathan Edwards' sermon, The Christian Pilgrim. Section 3. Instruction afforded by the consideration that life is a journey or pilgrimage toward heaven. First, this doctrine may teach us moderation in our mourning for the loss of such dear friends, who, while they lived, improved their lives to right purposes. If they lived a holy life, then their lives were a journey towards heaven. And why should we be immoderate in mourning when they got to their journey's end? Death, though it appears to us with a frightful aspect, is to them a great blessing. Their end is happy and better than their beginning. The day of their death is better than the day of their birth, Ecclesiastes 7:1. While they lived, they desired heaven and chose it above this world or any of its enjoyments. For this they earnestly longed, and why should we grieve that they have obtained it? Now they have got to their father's house. They find more comfort than 1,000 times now that they are gone home than they did in their journey. And in this world they underwent such labor and toil. It was a wilderness they passed through. There were many difficulties in the way, mountains and rough places. It was laborious and fatiguing to travel the road, and they had many wearisome days and nights. But now they have got to their everlasting rest. And I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth, yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works do follow them. Revelation 14:13. They look back upon the difficulties and sorrows and dangers of life, rejoicing that they have surmounted them all. We are ready to look upon death as their calamity and to mourn that those who were so dear to us should be in the dark grave, that they are there transformed to corruption and worms, taken away from their dear children and enjoyments, etc., as though they were in awful circumstances. But this is owing to our infirmity. They are in a happy condition, inconceivably blessed. They do not mourn, but rejoice with exceeding joy. Their mouths are filled with joyful songs, and they drink at rivers of pleasure. They find no mixture of grief that they have changed their earthly enjoyments and the company of mortals for heaven. Their life here, though in the best circumstances, was attended with much that was adverse and afflictive. But now there is an end to all adversity. They shall hunger no more, nor thirst any more. Neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them and shall lead them into living fountains of waters, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. Revelation 7:16 and 17. It is true we shall see them no more in this world. Yet we ought to consider that we are traveling towards the same place. And why should we break our hearts that they have got there before us? We are following after them and hope as soon as we get to our journey's end to be with them again in better circumstances. A degree of mourning for near relations when departed is not inconsistent with Christianity, but very agreeable to it. For as long as we are flesh and blood, we have animal propensities and affections, but we have just reason that our mourning should be mingled with joy. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them that are asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as others that have no hope. 1 Thessalonians 4:13. That is, they should not sorrow as the heathen who had no knowledge of a future happiness. This appears by the following verse. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. Second, if our lives ought to be only a journey towards heaven, how ill do they improve their lives that spend time traveling towards hell? Some men spend their whole lives, from their infancy to their dying day, in going down the broad way to destruction. They not only draw nearer to hell as to time, but they every day grow more ripe for destruction. They are more assimilated to the inhabitants of the internal world. While others press forward in the straight and narrow way to life and laboriously travel up the hill toward Zion against the inclinations and tendency of the flesh, these run with a swift career down to eternal death. This is the employment of every day with all wicked men, and the whole day is spent in it. As soon as they ever awake in the morning, they set out anew in the way to hell and spend every waking moment in it. They begin in early days. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies. Psalm 58:3. They hold on to it with perseverance. Many of them who live to be old are never weary in it. Though they live to be 100 years old, they will not cease in traveling in the way to hell till they arrive there. And all the concerns of life are subordinated to this employment. A wicked man is a servant of sin, and his powers and faculties are employed in the service of sin and in fitness for hell. And all his possessions are so used by him as to be subservient to the same purpose. Men spend their time in treasuring up wrath against the day of wrath. Thus do all unclean persons who live in lascivious practices in secret. All malicious persons, all profane persons that neglect the duties of religion. Thus do all unjust persons and those who are fraudulent and oppressive in their dealings. Thus do all backbiters and revilers and all covetous persons that set their hearts chiefly on the riches of this world. Thus do tavern hunters and frequenters of evil company and many other kinds that might be mentioned. Thus the bulk of mankind are hastening onward in the broad way to destruction, which is, as it were, filled up with the multitude that are going in it with one accord. And they are every day going to hell out of this broad way by thousands. Multitudes are continually flowing down into the great lake of fire and brimstone as some mighty river constantly disembogues its water into the ocean. Third, hence, when persons are converted, they do but begin their work and set out in the way they have to go. They never till then do anything at that work in which their whole lives ought to be spent. Persons before conversion never take a step that way. Then does a man first set out on his journey when he is brought home to Christ. And so far is he from having done his work that his care and labor in his Christian work and business is then but begun, in which he must spend the remaining part of his life. Those persons do ill who, when they are converted and have obtained a hope of being in a good condition, do not strive as earnestly as they did before while they were under awakenings. They ought, henceforward, as long as they live, to be as earnest and laborious, as watchful and careful as ever. Yea, they should increase more and more. It is no just excuse that now they have obtained conversion. Should not we be as diligent as that we ourselves may be, that we may serve and glorify God, happy? And if we have obtained grace, yet we ought to strive as much that we may obtain the other degrees that are before, as we did to obtain that small degree that is behind. The apostle tells us that he forgot what was behind and reached forth towards what was before. Philippians 3:13. Yea, those who are converted have now a further reason to strive for grace, for they have seen something of its excellency. A man who has once tasted the blessings of Canaan has more reason to press towards it than he ever had before. And they who are converted should strive to make their calling and election sure. All those who are converted are not sure of it, and those who are sure do not know that they shall be always so. And still, seeking and serving God with the utmost diligence is the way to have assurance and to have it maintained. Section 4. An exhortation so to spend the present life that it may only be a journey towards heaven. Labor to obtain such a disposition of mind that you may choose heaven for your inheritance and home, and may earnestly long for it, and be willing to change this world and all its enjoyments for heaven. Labor to have your heart taken up so much about heaven and heavenly enjoyments that you may rejoice when God calls you to leave your best earthly friends and comforts for heaven, there to enjoy God in Christ. Be persuaded to travel in the way that leads to heaven, that is, in holiness, self-denial, mortification, obedience to all the commands of God, following Christ's example, and in a way of a heavenly life, or imitation of the saints and angels in heaven. Let it be your daily work, from morning till night, and hold out in it to the end. Let nothing stop or discourage you, or turn you aside from this road, and let all other concerns be subordinated to this. Consider the reasons that have been mentioned why you should thus spend your life, that this world is not your abiding place, that the future world is to be your everlasting abode, and that the enjoyments and concerns of this world are to be given entirely in order to another. And consider further for motive. First, how worthy is heaven that your life should be wholly spent as a journey towards it? So what better purpose can you spend your life, whether you respect your duty or your interest? What better end can you propose to your journey than to obtain heaven? You are placed in this world with a choice given to you, that you may travel which way you please, and one way leads to heaven. Now, can you direct your course better than this way? All men have some aim or other in living. Some mainly seek worldly things. They spend their days in such pursuits. But is not heaven, where is fullness of joy forever, much more worthy to be sought by you? And can you better employ your strength, use of means, and spend your days than in traveling the road that leads to the everlasting enjoyment of God, to His glorious presence, to the new Jerusalem, to the heavenly Mount Zion, where all your desires will be filled and no danger of ever losing your happiness? No man is at home in this world, whether he chooses heaven or not. Here he is but a transient person. Where can you choose your home better than in heaven? Second, this is the way to have death comfortable to us, to spend our lives so as to be only a journeying towards heaven, is the way to be free from bondage and to have the prospect and forethought of death comfortable. Does the traveler think of his journey's end with fear and terror? Is it terrible to him to think that he has almost got to his journey's end? Were the children of Israel sorry after 40 years' travel in the wilderness when they had almost got to Canaan? This is the way to be able to part with the world without grief. Does it grieve the traveler when he has got home to quit his staff and load of provisions that he had to sustain him by the way? Third, no more of your life will be pleasant to think of when you come to die than has been spent after this manner. If you have spent none of your life this way, your whole life will be terrible to you to think of, unless you die under some great delusion. You will see then that all of your life that has been spent otherwise is lost. You will see then the vanity of all other aims that you have proposed to yourself. The thought of what you have here possessed and enjoyed will not be pleasant to you unless you can think also that you have subordinated them to this purpose. Fourth, consider that those who are willing thus to spend their lives as a journey towards heaven may have heaven. Heaven, however high and glorious, is attainable to such poor, worthless creatures as we are. we may attain that glorious region which is the habitation of angels, yea, the dwelling place of the Son of God, and where is the glorious presence of the great Jehovah, and we may have it freely, without money and without price, if we are but willing to travel the road that leads to it and bend our course that way as long as we live, we may and shall have heaven for our eternal resting place. Let it be considered that if our lives be not a journey towards heaven, they will be a journey to hell. All mankind, after they have been here a short while, go to either of these two great receptacles of all that depart out of this world, the one in heaven, whither the bulk of mankind throng, and one or the other of these must be the issue of our course in this world. I shall conclude by giving a few directions. Labor to get a sense of the vanity of this world, on account of the little satisfaction that is here to be enjoyed, its short continuance and unservableness when we stand most in need of help, that is, on a deathbed. All men that live any considerable time in the world might see enough to convince them of its vanity if they would but consider. Be persuaded, therefore, to exercise consideration when you see and hear, from time to time, of the death of others. Labor to turn your thoughts this way. See the vanity of the world in such a glass. Second, labor to be much acquainted with heaven. If you are not acquainted with it, you will not be likely to spend your life as a journey thither. You will not be sensible of its worth, nor will you long for it. Unless you are much conversant in your mind with a better good, it will be exceeding difficult to you to have your thoughts loose from these things, to use them only in subordination to something else, and be ready to part with them for the sake of that better good. Labor, therefore, to obtain a realizing sense of the heavenly world, to get a firm belief of its reality, and to be very much conversant with it in your thoughts. Third, seek heaven only by Jesus Christ. Christ tells us that he is the way, the truth, and the life, John 14:6. He tells us that he is the door of the sheep. I am the door, by me if any man enter in, he shall be saved and go in and out and find pasture, John 10:9. If we therefore would improve our lives as a journey towards heaven, we must seek it by him and not by our own righteousness, as expecting to obtain it only for his sake. Looking to him and having our dependence on him who has procured it for us by his merit, and expect that strength to walk in holiness, the way that leads to heaven, only from him. Fourth, let Christians help one another in going this journey. There are many ways whereby Christians might greatly forward one another in their way to heaven, as by religious conference, etc. Therefore, let them be exhorted to go this journey as it were in company, conversing together and assisting one another. Company is very desirable in a journey, but in none so much as this. Let them go united and not fall out by the way, which would be to hinder one another, but use all means that they can to help each other up the hill. This would ensure a more successful traveling and a more joyful meeting at their Father's house in glory. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Classic Christian Writers Podcast. For more information, please visit immoderate.wordpress.com.